This is the Missing People podcast. I'm Steve Branham. Welcome to the second part of Kelly's conversation with Vicki Kelly, mother of Tommy Kelly and founder of the Tommy Foundation. Their conversation continues.
We're back with Vicki Kelly from the Tommy Foundation of Oregon, talking to us tonight about her story, about what the Tommy Foundation has done and is going to accomplish. Thank you for joining us again, Vicki.
Thank you, Kelly.
Now, you mentioned something just a few minutes ago in our part one of this audio presentation. You mentioned CART. Now, I suspect that quite a few viewers are not going to have heard of CART. So can you tell us what CART is and does?
CART stands for Child Abduction Response Team. It is where all agencies in an area where there might be a child abduction come together without jurisdictional issues. And everybody knows their job. They have memorandums of understanding between agencies. And it's just working together and using all resources available in the safe and hopefully rapid recovery of a missing child that has been abducted.
So if somebody wanted to get CART going where they live, what would they do and who is responsible for it? Is something that is initialized by law enforcement? How does that work?
CART is, the best way to access the CART information is to go to TommyFoundation.org. We have the information right there at our homepage on CART. The CART programs can be located at amber-net.org. And all the other law enforcement trainings provided by the Justice Department through Amber Alert are there. They also have missing and abducted children investigation trainings and leadership in missing and abducted children trainings for law enforcement. And it's not only for law enforcement at these trainings. They encourage district attorneys to attend, dispatchers, because they're the ones that get the first phone calls from a searching family reporting, you know, a missing loved one. They need to know the questions to ask to assess, you know, what is going on. Also, search and rescue is encouraged to attend these trainings. A community team that comes together specifically to respond to an abducted child case.
And these trainings are all free, isn't that correct?
And they are free. That is the key word to law enforcement. They are free.
Excellent.
They provide lodging, the travel, and they do put you up in a wonderful hotel. And the only expenses would be your dinners. The CART training is 5 days, and some of the others are 2, 3, 4, depends on, you know, the actual training that is being used. But, you know, it's free to law enforcement. And a missing person can happen anywhere, anytime, to any community. And a community may never have a missing person, but they sure don't want to be learning as they're in the middle of an investigation.
No, absolutely not. So it almost sounds like CART is a free off-site training, but it also sounds at the same time, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it's like a local response team that you can develop. Is that
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. It's exactly. They give you the policies. The training, I have received CART training and leadership in missing children training. They are phenomenal trainings. You do tabletop exercises that give you a scenario and you break off into teams. And after you've, you know, gone through 4 days of training, okay, what have you learned? How would you apply what you've learned to this scenario? What resources would you, you know, call upon? And it's a wonderful, wonderful training, and I would love to see every, you know, law enforcement agency, if not in their own county, but, you know, regionally, form teams to be prepared to work together to bring these, you know, abducted children home. And my understanding is CART necessarily isn't just for abducted children. It's for different scenarios as well. They can lap over utilizing what they learn at CART to, you know, other missing persons cases.
That is definitely very good information. Now, something that you and I talked with before I went to the conference in Wisconsin, and I'm going to assume that you have a vested interest in, is missing minorities. Is that true that you've got an interest in it? Is there some special training or knowledge that you have of missing minorities or treatment of that you'd like to talk about?
I have a degree in Native American studies, and for some reason I found at school a class. I returned to college when Tommy was missing, and I needed to take an elective, and I don't sing, and I don't dance, and I don't have any artistic ability, and somebody said, Vicki, take Native American oral tradition and dance. So I went in the first day of class. The teacher came out, and the first thing he said is, you are all here for a reason. You may not know what your reason is, but you are all here for a reason. I found my reason because I became very interested in the subject of Native American culture. And I was at a conference, and Ron Laney, the assistant director of the Child Protection Division of the OJJDP, said, so Vicki, how's school going? I said, well, I'm now a Native American, you know, minor student. And he goes, you know, we don't get many Native American children missing. And I started thinking about it and did some research and began investigating the cultural historic reasons why this would be so, and advocated to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children Minority Outreach Program to develop a minority outreach to the Native American community. They are still here. You know, they are still very much part of this country. And to teach child safety to children from their own cultural perspective. They need to have pride in who they are as Native Americans and should be taught from an oral tradition perspective, child safety. And I have been told that the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children is exploring this and plans on developing a policy to as an outreach to the Native American community.
Folks who have a need for information about that could turn to you as a resource, then it certainly sounds.
I would be delighted to, you know, support any family or to, you know, talk to anybody that has an interest in this.
Now, I know that there's something that you're working on or have been working on for a while now that has now become near and dear to your heart, as it is to mine. And I know that you told me beforehand that that was very important, that you had a good piece of time to talk about it. So I'm going to let you talk about it.
Well, here in Oregon, we are waiting to receive the day for our testimony to the Judiciary Committee on Oregon Senate Bill 351. And what it does, it will establish procedures and policy for missing persons reports, investigation of missing persons cases, and also procedure for identification of unidentified human remains. We're going to get, you know, on the books a policy that every law enforcement agency in the state of Oregon is supposed to follow on the best practices on responding to missing persons cases. So hopefully, you know, more people will be brought home safely.
That's actually a part of our campaign for the Missing with Project Jason, that we're trying to work on this in each and every state. And Vicki, along with one of our volunteers, Robert, is leading the way in Oregon to get this going. And I know that you've spent a lot of time, you've had several meetings, and you've also done an excellent job in getting support through with various organizations and law enforcement there for this legislation that will help get it passed.
We've been very pleased with the support and the cooperation that law enforcement has given and assisted us in getting the best piece of legislation that we can. We had a lot of concessions to make, you know, in wording, language, They thought a lot of the ideas, especially the Project Jason Amendment, providing to 13 families a resource page with various resources that they can turn to for help, and also procedures on notifying families when human remains have been identified. I think one of the most important things is that DNA is going to be taken from 13 families and will be data banked. And once a month, CODIS is scanned, and if any unidentified human remains come out and there's a DNA match, as sad as it is, at least the family will know and be able to recover and bring home their missing loved one. It will be required for law enforcement to make every best effort and have it documented of their efforts to notify families that their loved one has been recovered and identified.
And that is definitely becoming more and more key with the technology, with DNA, that we can use that technology to help us find the answers with our missing loved ones and bring them home. So very, very important. You've done an excellent job there for us in the campaign. You're welcome. And for anyone who is a campaign volunteer from another state, because you've done such an excellent job and made a lot of inroads there in Oregon, what would you say are some tips for them as they're beginning to work on the campaign in their state? What can you tell them that will help them succeed in their own home state?
The first and most important thing is to find a senator or a representative in their state legislature that will sponsor the bill. You know, that's first and foremost. We were very lucky that Robert Bristow with Project Jason's Campaign for the Missing got Kate Brown. She has been just absolutely stupendous in the support and getting this bill, you know, through the legislative process. And then you've got to get the support of law enforcement. And I don't mean just your local sheriff, even though that's very viable. If they can write letters of support, you know, to the senator that she can show to the Senate and to the House when it goes up for a vote. But you've got to get the head of the state police, the sheriff association in that state, the chief of police association in that state, the forensic division of the state police, usually their support is crucial, because they will have the opportunity at the Judiciary Committee hearings on the bill that if they don't like it and they testify against it, the bill will get buried and won't even get to the floor for a vote. Law enforcement support is crucial. And with various states doing the legislation, the groundwork has been laid for other campaigners in other states that take this on to say, here, it's already done. You know, here is an example or a model that you can work from. And law enforcement, the support has been unanimous here in Oregon. I'm so pleased. And they can show that law enforcement totally supported this bill in Oregon. What questions do they have why they would be opposed to it?
So you're actually, in a sense, one of the models for the model, I guess we could say.
I have been told by people that were on the original panel with the Department of Justice when they drafted the model state policy and started this whole, you know, campaign a few years ago. The person that was on the panel has reviewed the legislation and said it's an excellent piece of legislation because states can tear it apart. I believe there is a state that didn't include the DNA factor into the legislation for whatever reason. That's a critical component of the legislation, is identifying these unidentified human remains. What is there, Kelly, 40,000 they estimate?
40,000 to 50,000, that's correct.
You know, and how many loved ones are out there still searching? It's critical. So, yeah, Oregon incorporated every point that was critical in the DOJ model policy and, of course, adapted it to our state statutes. Every state is unique in the way they write their laws, but they followed the policy that it's a good piece of legislation with full and unanimous support of all divisions of law enforcement agencies. So I would be happy to help anybody you know, with anything that they might need, documentations, research that we have done, that you have done, you know, I've got to share with people, because originally it was supposed to be a federal piece of legislation, and the Department of Justice decided that it had to go state by state by state. There's 50 states, and I think the Campaign for the Missing Volunteers has done a stupendous job in the states where it's been passed, but there's still states where it needs to get passed.
Yes, we actually have many more states with either no volunteers at all or inactive volunteers, so we definitely are in a position that we need to get those states going again, and I'm very pleased to say that just today I've heard from some individuals in Pennsylvania who want to get started there. So with some of the recent press that we've had for the campaign in some different states, such as Indiana and Connecticut, and soon to be Oregon, we're getting some more volunteers coming to us wanting to help get that passed, and it's so critical. And, you know, we're working with mentoring those who are working on it because, yes, as you mentioned, there is a state where they're eliminating the very critical DNA information. We worked with them on that, but there's some individuals there who mistakenly feel that it's unconstitutional. And even though we've shown it's not, they haven't accepted that. So we'll continue to work on that issue in that particular state. Now, you
that
also...
Issue was, I'm sorry,
ahead.
Kelly.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say that was one of the issues that was raised about, you know, the right to privacy. And that is covered in our piece of legislation that answered the questions of the ACLU here.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, it is a valid question to the, you know, our rights to privacy, but at the same time, as long as that the privacy is insured for the person, say the person is found to be alive and does that information remain in the computer? Because sometimes people will give a lock of their the missing loved one's hair or baby teeth, and that DNA is entered into CODIS. When that missing person is found, is that information removed from CODIS automatically? And yes, it is in our legislation.
For our listeners who may not be aware, and we talk about CODIS quite a bit because it is so important in our missing person cause, but CODIS is the federal database for the DNA analysis results to be entered into. And it does have different sections. It has a section that is family member reference samples, so that would be the DNA from the family members of the missing persons. Then it has a section for the DNA from the missing person themselves. It also has a section for crime scene DNA, and then a section for criminal offenders such as sex offender DNA. So that's what CODIS is. And as it pertains to our cause, we want to, this law, the Campaign for the Missing Law, the object is to get the DNA in there from the unidentified remains, from the family members of the missing and or the missing person themselves, so that the two can match against each other. So that is the purpose of CODIS.
One of the really important things for our legislation is that there is no fiscal impact upon the state. Oregon's budget is just in tatters, and legislatures like to have, you know, legislation that's not going to cost any money. And one of the ways that this is being accomplished is that Oregon is going to be using the lab of Dr. Arthur Eisenberg, Center for Human Identification in Texas, and he receives federal grants to do this before DNA samples would go to the headquarters of the FBI. He does the same thing now with, you know, the approval of the Justice Department, so that it will cost nothing for Oregon to data bank. It'll cost Oregon nothing to data bank. With no fiscal impact, Oregon will be using this lab of Dr. Eisenberg to data bank all of the samples of DNA from searching families. And as he explained it to me, once a month, I believe it was at your chat even, Kelly, that once a month CODIS is scanned for matches between unidentified and for data banked DNA samples. And so monthly, you know, every entry into that data bank is scanned. And it will, Dr. Eisenberg made a profound statement that there should be no unidentified here in the United States with the technology that we have today.
Absolutely not. And we're so grateful for their help. They're so passionate about this. They want to identify every single unidentified remains because they know that there's somebody out there that loves and misses that person, and they want to find out who it is. And that is something that's a huge impact with this legislation piece with the Campaign for the Missing, is that when lawmakers and law enforcement and other state entities first look at it, I think they get very concerned because they look at the section about the DNA and having to do all this sampling, and they don't know about the Center for Human Identification and that they will do the DNA sampling for free. And so that always causes an issue. So we have to and do communicate that that exists. And it's wonderful that Oregon has written that right into their law. In one of our other states that we're working on, they didn't know it existed, and their fiscal impact statement said that the first year it was going to cost $7 million, but that's not true. So when faced with passing a bill that, you know, they estimate is going to cost $7 million, that's not going to happen. But we know who's going to step in and help, and that would be the Center for Human Identification. Thank goodness for them and their work.
And their compassion, you know, their compassion. Another thing, too, that our legislation will do is establish a missing persons clearinghouse. Every state is required to have a missing children's clearinghouse. The federal government mandated that quite a few years ago, but not every state has a missing persons clearinghouse. And we will be having one here in Oregon in conjunction under the umbrella of the state police in cooperation with the Missing Children's Clearinghouse. So, you know, this legislation is just absolutely fantastic in empowering law enforcement with the tools to be able to, you know, recover more missing people more rapidly and to identify, you know, they'll be solving cases. And that's their goal, I think, is to solve cases. And so at first, yeah, there was the resistance to the legislation. The first question they asked is, how much is this going to cost us? And they were absolutely very pleased when it's going to cost them nothing, because the government also has these grants. I believe $1 billion is available for agencies for training of law enforcement and for other upgrades in technology in their own forensic state laboratories. So the money is there. The services and resources are there. And once they realize that, and that this is not telling them what to do, but is best practices that should be implemented across the country, they were all for it.
And again, I thank you for your wonderful work there in Oregon, not just as a volunteer with the Campaign for the Missing, but just in everything that you're doing there for the state. You really are helping to make that a model state as it pertains to missing persons policies and procedures and awareness. And so
all it takes is bringing the awareness to them, you know, that these services and programs are out there, that so many of them are free, that it will be in their best interest to be prepared to have, you know, the knowledge on how to respond to these investigations. And I am very delighted to see the response of law enforcement here in Oregon, not just the state agencies and the associations, but of even the little local law enforcement agencies that are taking advantage of the trainings being offered.
Excellent. So if you're law enforcement from another state, listen and learn from those in Oregon, because I know that they want to close cases. They do want, they're in service to us, the public, and they do want to help. It's just that sometimes their hands are tied and they haven't been given the tools. They haven't been given the resources and the training, and we're all working so hard to provide that and to help them to be aware of it. And Vicki, we've talked about a lot of things that will help certain listeners, you know, such as law enforcement, Campaign for the Missing Volunteers, just in general. But since you have had the experience, unfortunately, of having a missing person so close in your life, and you've also had specialized training and dealt with many other families of the missing, what advice would you have for anyone who's listening who has, unfortunately, this circumstance going on in their own life?
To have a missing loved one is like being on a roller coaster. And it's, you know, we're all members of a group and a club that we wish we weren't. But the most important thing is to never give up hope. Until you know otherwise, never give up hope. And take care of yourself. Take care of each other, those within the family, because you are the one that's going to continue to spearhead the search for your missing loved one. And if you get to a point of exhaustion, you never know when you're going to get that phone call. You need to be in the best physical and mental and spiritual health that you can in order to be able to respond to whatever the next day may bring. So I would encourage everybody to take care of themselves.
And that's excellent advice from someone who knows. Well, thank you so much, Vicki, for being with us here this evening. I know that you're so busy. You've probably got to run and work on the legislation or many of the other things that you do with the Tommy Foundation. Your information provided has been very important, and I'm sure will be very enlightening to many of our listeners. So, again, I thank you so much for joining us. And we had Vicki Kelly from the Tommy Foundation. And, Vicki, go ahead, if you would, please, and give the website address again.
The Tommy Foundation can be located at tommyfoundation.org, TOMMYFOUNDATION, .org. And our phone number is 888-994-5437.
Thank you again, Vicki, for being with us tonight and for sharing your story.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm honored.
You're welcome.
This concludes the second part of Kelly's conversation with Vicki. You're listening to the Missing People Podcast, copyright 2007, all rights reserved, and held jointly by the Missing People Podcast and Project Jason. Original music created and performed by Janelle Rapp. For more information on Project Jason, please go to projectjason.org. To learn more about the Tommy Foundation, please go to the website at tommyfoundation.org. For my co-host, Kelly Jolkowski, I'm Steve Bronham with the Missing People Podcast. Thanks for listening.
Jesus' name, well, it's been that way for more. little I know about fame. Right here, right now, it's so clear. Just how little I know. Just how little I know. Can't help but think she's out there somewhere. Maybe in a fog just like me. Maybe her wipers won't move, and maybe her defrost won't turn on, and maybe her battery's gone dead, and she can't see the lights ahead. But she hears